Hi, you're listening or watching Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, Hump of the Week, 7 at 7, archive interview with today's guests, David Campbell and Olive Tucker Lee of House of Colour.
Dan, geez, just as well that rain, shower of title, but I'm standing in the middle of O'Connell Street in the rain. So here we are, and it's another Hump of the Week, 7 at 7. Where do the weeks go? Well, today I'm in, as you can see, the beautiful city centre of Dublin. And I'm on just off O'Connell Street, but just down the road behind me, you turn right, you're onto Abbey Street. And one of the greatest hairdressing, Irish hairdressing stories started there. It started there more just over 24 years ago. And it was created by two amazing guys who I was lucky to bump shoulders with in my Peter Mark days. And it's the creation of the globally known, and definitely globally known, because I know they are known globally, House of Colour. House of Colour was started by David Campbell and his buddy, Paul Bourne. Okay, two great mates, two great hairdressers, started this journey in Abbey Street. And unfortunately, Paul was taken away from us early, and we were left with David to build the empire, along with Paul's wife, Susan. And along the journey, they've now grown that into a team of 90 hairdressing professionals with five salons spread out across Dublin and surrounding counties, and an academy that's now in the beautiful City West location, which is a hub of industry really in Ireland. So I'm going to introduce the first guy. Sorry, there's only one guy here, and there's a beautiful lady. Her name is in Fire Tablet if you happen to be looking. It's Olive Tucker Lee. So first of all, can I introduce you to David Campbell, legend of the hairdressing industry and former president of the Irish Hairdressing Federation, just Hairdressers Federation, just stepped down. David, welcome to Seoul.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Greg. That's an unbelievable intro. I'm blown away by that, to be honest.
Now, would you like to bring this beautiful lady, because there's nobody going to introduce this lady better than you.
Yeah, well, Olive Tucker Lee is an absolute icon in the industry. She's actually a winner of the Irish Hairdressing Federation Icon Award. She is the first ever, the only ever Irish girl to make it onto Fame Team UK. She is a Welsh Style Council artist. She's a multi-award winner. She is been on television, been on radio. She's done photo shoots. She's done Fashion Week. She's basically epitomized all that's good about Irish hairdressing. And she started with us when she was a wee girl as a coordinator. So now she's grown into this icon. So I'd like to introduce Olive Tucker Lee.
Well, thanks a million for that introduction. I'll take that all day long.
Welcome. Yeah. I couldn't do it better than him. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that, Greg. I don't know about that.
I could try, but you know what I mean? I'm learning from the master there, you know? I'm only cutting my teeth. So let's kick into the 7 at 7. And our first question, what I love is, why did you choose hairdressing as a career? And we're going to kick off with you, David.
Well, I initially didn't really choose hairdressing. I wanted to be a footballer. I left school early. Didn't do my leaving cert. And I was actually a very good footballer. I was quite good.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, I you know, played for Dublin, Leinster, made the Ireland squads, did all that business. And my mum said, look, if you're going to pursue this, you're going to need a part-time job if you leave school. She recommended I go to hairdressing. I started work in Petermark in the ILAC Centre. I lasted about 2 weeks, just couldn't get my head around it. Ended up leaving and told my mum I was going back to school. And I remember walking to get the bus to school one day, and I started to miss the smell of hairspray and the smell of damp towels. Now, I know that sounds really weird for any new newbies, but it was just that smell, and I ended up missing the staff room and the buzz of the girls and the buzz of the team. And at that stage in Petermark and the Oil, just to paint the picture, there was over 30 Saturday part-time assistants. That was without the rest of the staff. And I went back and I basically, I begged Des Murray at the time, who was the manager there at the time, who now owns Ultimate Hair and Beauty. to take me back, and Des Julie did. And I sort of just fell in love with hairdressing. And a pivotal point for me came when I was offered a scholarship in at Clemson University in America, a soccer scholarship. And they were willing to forgo my leaving and pop me in. I just, I suppose I went, that's what I went after. So I fell in love with it. I just completely fell head over heels in love with it. Now, I was never any good at it. But I loved the passion, the enthusiasm, fashion. Initially, you think of the girls, but then you become friends with the girls. So that goes out the window. I loved the fact that, you know, it was a way to you know, make yourself be seen. And I felt that these people were so empowering. You know, they were all self-sufficient. They were all self-made. They were all living a better life than most of the people I knew. They went on better holidays, drove better cars, dressed better. And I was just blown away by them. And that was me. I was in.
Give people a perspective of Peter Mark, the Oilac Centre. I always remember being in L'Oreal years ago, and one of the technicians said, "Oh, really?" And I said, "I work on Mary Street." "Oh, that's around from the other salon, in the Oilac Centre." Yeah. You know, the manager, Des, says, "Yeah, no, I'm, yeah." He stands like a traffic organiser, just directing people around. And I know you got a good training in how to fix hairdryers in that salon.
Yeah. Well, our initial first year.
I remember you used to go around and it'd be like little elves all sitting there soldering hairdryers together. Because then rather than send them off, I give somebody, we'll have a repair for you tomorrow. And it's for the times it was, that's the times we live.
You know, at that stage, your first year of hairdressing was sweeping the floor. Obviously, you were told to take the floor at 12 o'clock and come back at 2 o'clock. Repairing hair dryers, cleaning out drains, folding the towels in the towel room, repairing the towel dryer down the back, emptying ashtrays, you know, and then you sort of graduated onto shampoo. And when you made the basins, it was like this revelation that you've managed to actually get into shampoo. but it was, I mean, an amazing time. And you know, people I met then shaped me for life. There's no doubt about that. But it was a school of hard knocks. There's no doubt about it. It was sink or swim. You know, you got to survive, you have to thrive, to coin all the sayings. It was amazing.
And that's the time it was, going back all that time. Let's talk about more recently when people join our industry. And Olive, who probably came in decades after David, what's the age difference?
Not that many decades.
Decades, absolute decades later.
I think you're just two. Maybe one and a half.
What inspired you to join the fantastic industry that is hairdressing?
Basically, what inspired me to kind of join hairdressing was I kind of came in from a different angle. So I was never into hair. I was always came from a world of dance and drama and stage work because that's where I grew up. I was a very competitive dancer and I went on to do a lot more kind of singing, dance and that. So I was always very outgoing. I lived in London for 2 years and I remember coming home from London. And all my pals were talking about this hair salon that had opened in town and it was the place to be. It was happening. Two of my friends had actually got apprenticeships. And I was like, all right. And I knew it was only at the starting up, but I, you know, hadn't a clue. So I was like, oh, here and get myself in there. I could see them. They were in the best of gear, decked out. And they never stopped talking about the place. They loved it. So I went in and obviously I was like, listen, you know, is there any interviews going? What's the story? Kind of hinting around the area of I'd like to do maybe front of house. Didn't want to, you know, throw myself in case they were like, no, there's nothing here for you. But I had sat with David and Catherine, David's wife. And we kind of had a general conversation and I was like, I think I'd like to get involved in this. And I knew they were very competitive hairdressers, which I loved because coming from a competitive dance world, I was like, you compete in a hairdressing industry? Like, what way does this go? So that really, really struck a chord with me. So, you know, they took me under their wing. They put me in front of house, which I absolutely loved. Now, I was no good at it because that in itself, Greg, is a skill. That is a skill. I hold my hands up to any coordinators, receptionists. I mean, that's a skill. And what I learned very early on is that I have a really, really, they all kind of ironed out now, had a big problem with numbers and decimal points. So, you know, David, as he does, would ring at the end of the day. How was the day going? How are the team? I'd be like, oh, yeah, brilliant. Not a bother. I was after getting my hair done. I was delighted with life. And he'd say, well, what was the take? And I'd give him zeros more than what we actually did because I had no concept of numbers. No concept.
David was going out rubbing his hands. And then getting a phone.
Yeah, David caught on very quickly because he was like, call out to me, call out what you see.
I think the first Monday Olive did our totals, we did 15 and a half grand on a Monday. And I nearly fell off my seat in one salon. And later it turns out it was 1500. Olive just, you know, like had a problem with the zeros.
Decimal points.
I did automatically feel when I was in House of Colour, it was the Liffey Street branch, I was like, this is where I'm meant to be. This is like, I felt they were all so warm and, you know, it was like a family environment. So I remember the first competition, it was the L'Oréal Colour Trophy that I went to. And I remember standing there on the sidelines and I've said it before, I've never seen beauty and style the way I've seen it that day. It just struck a chord with me. I loved the way everyone in House of Colour knew who they were competing against. They knew who the top hairdressers were, all the names, this is such and such. And I remember one of the girls taking me under the wing and saying, that's such and such, and they own that shop and this, that, and the other. And I just thought, I want to be in this industry. I don't want to be front of house. I want to compete. I love the fashion. I love the models. This is where I want to be. So the next, the following Monday, I went in, knocked on the office door, and I said, David, can we talk? He's like, oh, you're leaving? And I was like, no, I'm all in. I want an apprenticeship. So he set me down and he was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And we did the interview and he said, I want you to go home and talk to your parents about it. And there's no messing, like you're all in or you're not in. There's no messing here. Like that's from the jump.
How old were you then?
Oh God, I was probably, would I have been doing it? Maybe 19, 18, 19, 20, maybe 18, I think. Yeah. And I remember going back in and I started my first day in the apprenticeship in Liffey Street. And I will never forget to this day the warmth of the salon members, because I was embarrassed going in because I was thinking, oh my God, I'm dropping in wages. I'm coming down. I'm starting from the get-go. And to this day, it was the best thing I ever did.
And having the experience of knowing what you're not good at.
Yeah.
But then you know the industry, it's the right building I want to be in. It's the right, I want to be one of these. I just have to find
I want to be with these people.
Part of the industry I want to be in. It's like Dave, you admitting in the beginning, I'm not the greatest hairdresser, I never was. And you've always said that. But then you kind of go, but look what you've done. And look what you've won. You know what I mean? Are we paused here? Yeah, hold on.
I automatically knew when I started my apprenticeship and I was in that salon that these were the people that I wanted to be around, and that team was, it was home for me.
That's brilliant. So as Journeys and successful stylists, Dave, you had a great career as a manager within Peter Mark. Olive, you started, you know, make a name for yourself as a stylist. So I'm going to go to you, Dave. When was the moment when you felt I need to become a salon owner? You know what I mean?
There was one particular turning point where I felt I had a lot of ideas and a lot of things I wanted to do and a lot of ways I wanted to try and influence people and influence the industry. And I remember one particular point turning to Paul and saying, I think this is the way I'm going. What are you thinking? And he was just on the same wavelength. And the thing with Paul, I suppose, Paul was 8 or 9 years older than me. I had been best man at his wedding. I was godfather to his first child. I was best man at his wedding. I think I was only about 19 and I was best man at his wedding 20 when I was a kid. And he had really been a very strong mentor for me. And we'd become firm friends. But you're always wary about going into business. And we just felt there was things that we wanted to do differently. We wanted to shake up the establishment. I mean, that was number one. We wanted to give youth a chance. That was number two. we wanted to come out and do these crazy things, like not have a radio in the salon, have MTV, serve white wine, serve red wine, serve champagne. We wanted to have a sandwich menu. We wanted to start at 10 o'clock in the morning, which at that stage was bananas. People couldn't believe we were doing that. We wanted to send all of our trainees to Vidal Sassoon. We wanted to do a 2.5 year apprenticeship. We wanted to compete at every competition. We wanted to basically not go to the outside and recruit. We wanted to grow our own. And when we were talking about these things in 1996 and 1997, we wanted to have color menus. I mean, I show the apprentices now our first ever color menu in 1997 and the colors we had on it, you know. And when we were talking about doing these things, the established hairdressing people at the time, who were fantastic in their own right, were basically saying, look, none of that is going to work. None of that is going to work. And I suppose when Paul passed, and he passed a month after we opened, exactly 1 month after we opened, it compounded the fact of this will fail. You know, that was the word, they're going to go down, they're going to fail. And I remember going and having a heart-to-heart with Susan, and Susan didn't want to come into the business, but I knew what Susan was and how good Susan was and what she could bring. And I remember saying to Susan, this is the way to go. You've got to come on this journey with us. You can bring so much to the team. And Susan then jumped in. And really since then, our emphasis has been on, you know, grow the people in the group. Grow the people in the group. The more you grow, the more you go. The more you give back, the more you get. The more you inspire, the more other people inspire people around them. And we became very much about developing a culture within the group that encouraged youth to go forward and do things. And I think that was important from our perspective. Yeah, serving the wine 20 years ago and serving the Prosecco 20 years ago, and all that's brilliant. And it's brilliant for the experience, and we built on that. But more importantly, I think we built a platform for people to get out there and think, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. And even at that, well, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. And that's the amount of, if you look at it from our point of view, David, is the amount, hang on, he's adjusting his camera.
I'm just making sure.
Well, as I say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And when we would have looked back on our PM days, and you'd say the amount of great salon owners that came from Peter Mark. But I'd look at you now, 24 years later, the amount of amazing hairdressers and salon owners that have now come from House of Colour. And that's your legacy. That's the true success, isn't it? That success breeds success. And you know that.
Yeah.
You have everybody with you for life's journey, because you left and done your own thing. And I think it's when a business is big enough to pat somebody on the back and say, well done, thanks for the time. But we're now somebody else through, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think you can't train people to be entrepreneurial in the way they approach salon work and business and earning money, and then when they actually go and become entrepreneurs, slate them for it. I think if you grow that, you've got to encourage it to the other end. And you know, I think at one stage, you know, I did a quote at a seminar. I said in 2017, you know, we had a very poor year by air standards award wise. We came second or third in loads of different things. But the winner of the World Transvision Award, Darren Lacken, the winner of the World L'Oreal Colour Trophy for Bradley, and the winner of the UK L'Oreal Colour Trophy, Sinead Kelly, and the runner-up in the Canadian L'Oreal Colour Trophy, Marjorie Mongan, were all House of Colour people. And I think at that point, we sort of looked at ourselves and said, okay, right, we may not have won, but actually we did. And, you know, we were the first on the phone to the guys to say, well done. So proud of you. And I think, you know, when you look at the legacy we all leave, I mean, the stuff you do, Greg, is outrageous in the industry. The things that all of them have done has been record breaking. But I do look at, you know, the likes of Darren in Crow Street, and Carla in The Space, and, you know, Suzanne and Anna in Comb, and Linda in Rum Toffee, and Nicola in The Hair Company. And they're all successful, thriving businesses that are doing very well for themselves, that have started with ourselves, you know.
But this leaves lovely into Olive. And when your head start getting to the level and you're thinking, should I go and open, you know, Olive's own version of House of Colour, or her own path, or is there room for me to join the company in a different perspective? So give us your reason as to how you became a salon owner or why.
Well, I was very lucky because an opportunity presented itself. And I know how David and Susan work. They don't just go into business with anybody. But I was lucky enough that I come up through the ranks. I've practically been reared in House of Colour. Do you know what I mean? So an opportunity presented itself. We sat down, we spoke about it, and it felt right. It was the right move for me. I'm lucky enough in the job that I work in that I get to get a mixed bag. So, you know, I go into David in the office even now, and I'm like, I want to do this, I want to do that. And we sit down, we make a plan. And when the opportunity arrived for Lucan, it just fit. It was just perfect. Like, I was kind of getting to a stage where, you know, competitions were great, but I wanted to develop people. I couldn't keep doing them all the time. I wanted to have a family. I was going to get married. I wanted to actually, you know, do what David and Susan did. I wanted to grow a team. So maybe eventually I could kind of step out a little bit and have it, you know, running itself. So Lucan came, and it's just been a phenomenal journey, really a learning curve. Like, I never thought that, you know, I could have a team of 10 people that, you know, that I could sit and mentor and even like look after them. Even now in these times, we are all in touch. We're, you know, it's a family environment, and that's what I'm about. I'm all about the people and the next step. I love to take a chance, and I'm one of those. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, you only get to live once, let's do it. And, you know, it really worked out well, which was great.
And have you got better at the numbers?
Oh, God, I had to get better at the numbers. Thank God for accountants is all I'm saying. And I have a very special accountant. He's loads of time and patience. But with David and Susan, like, we have our, you know, our weekly meetings, we have our monthly meetings. I'm lucky enough that they're so on top of the business. You can't not be, because you have so many questions, and it's the routine that you're built into, and it's the steps that you take. We have a procedure that we do, and we do it weekly, and it's done, and you just get used to it, and it works.
Yeah, like, you're one of the first people, David, I always remember bringing the word culture in, you know what I mean? And the more you take the layers back of House of Colour, you'll see how deep the culture goes and how it's bred into you from the day you walk in. You know, before you even pick up the brush to sweep the floor, there's a way of sweeping the floor. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's bred into you. And I can see that in other salons, like the people that you've mentioned, how they've taken that culture. It's their name out there, entity over the door, but it's still part of them. And the industry keeps evolving all the time, and you have to stay on top of the game. And that's what I love is your story is where, you know, somebody you didn't, there is places where sometimes people always think, well, my next option is to open up my own business.
Yeah.
You might not be business minded. And you kind of go, well, the next option is to go into business with somebody and still keep all the good things that you have. And you still have the opportunity to get the nicer car, blah, 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 because you're taking on a bigger role, you know? So I'm going to ask you, Dave, to go back to the beginning again, you know what I mean? Which was I read a book recently there, and I don't know whether this is relevant, but they say a young person who loses a parent at a very young age, statistically, are high achievers. 15 prime ministers in the UK, Bill Clinton, a string of celebrity sports people. And what they call it is the ignition point. It ignites, it's something ignites with them. And I'd look back and say, what happened in the very beginning there in those few months, losing Paul was the ignition point that really fast-tracked something that might have moved along nicely. But at the time, and I often wonder, you know, because we all looked, like, because we were all friends back then, and we all looked and went, oh my God, right. What's going to happen? Because he was such a big personality, Paul.
Oh, unbelievable.
And I went, where would you get another one of him? But what happened is you came out of the shadow of that, and this amazing personality came in that is phenomenally known within the industry. So if I was that, I'm kind of asking this question, saying, would you go back? Would you change anything? When you've already listed all the things you were going to do that were ahead of that time, you're kind of going, there's nothing else that he wasn't going to do. So is there anything there that yourself and Paul hadn't discussed that you might have think?
No, I think, you know, the strange thing about going back, I'm not big into would I change it. I never have been in life. I only believe in looking forward. Yeah. I've always been like that. I don't think you can affect the past. I don't think you can carry it. I think you can use the experiences of the past to push it forward. And I think that, you know, it, you know, it's a strange thing. You can use the past in two ways. And you touched on it there, Greg. You can use it as a crutch or you can use it as a driver. You know, and you make that choice as an individual. Nobody tells you.
Go.
Yeah, so I think people use, you know, what's happened to them previously, where they've had mistakes made, either as a crutch or a driver. I use it as a driver, or I encourage people to use it as a driver, because you make that choice as an individual. And I think it's too easy, and it is very much an Irish thing. I call it, do you want, I was gonna culture. I was gonna do it. We have made more mistakes as a group, and I've made more mistakes as an individual, and I mean, on every level, than any other person I know. But the thing is, we're wearing mistakes with pride. I'm actually quite happy that, you know, we lost a couple of shops in the recession, whether it be to rent renewal or whether it be to, it just wasn't working. It's good because I experienced that and meant going into other projects, I knew what to do. It's good that some people left. It's good that some people joined. It's good that some training programs didn't work for us because, again, it was a learning curve. It's a driver. If I could go back, would I want Paul back? Absolutely. How could you not want somebody that magnetic, that charismatic, that skillful, that amazing, not in the hairdressing industry? Can I change that? No, I can't. But I can use that. You know, I mean, we do our Hairdresser of the Year awards every year. 100 of us go to the, you know, the Gibson Hotel. We have a 3-course meal. There's free wine. There's free Prosecco. There's Salon of the Year. There's Assistant of the Year, Stylist of the Year. It's a huge night out. But the one award that everyone wants that we've been running for 23 years is the Paul Bourne Memorial Award. And Olive was a recipient of that as well. And that's the one award that, I am not joking, the whole room chokes up and cries at openly.
Yeah.
Because it's important that somebody that's had an effect on the industry and the way Paul did is remembered. But I can't change the fact he's not here. I can't. I'd love to, but I can't.
And then, Olive, I don't know whether that question is relevant to you. Do you think, you know, what would you have changed anything from taking on Lucan, or... would you look back and say, well, maybe even in the decor, was there something that you say, I should have done that maybe differently? Or did you open up, in other words, when it came to planning the salon, did you have enough of a say, or did you feel, I should have given David a clip in the neck and say, no, this is mine? Or did you have
freedom? No, we did go head to head over London and it's, but sure, I got me way, so we won't talk about that. But you know what? I looked at Lucan as a, like, I look at it now, it's a learning curve. Like, I had no idea, like, how to run a salon, how to operate a salon, how to run a team. So I had looked at what David and Susan had did, and I was like, I'm getting these two phenomenal mentors. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm all in. I'm like a sponge. Tell me what I need to do to make this successful, and I'll do it. Do you know what I mean? And it, especially with Lucan, we've always been about the people that we place in it. Like, it's a very local, loyal salon. And, you know, it's about the people that we place in it. And one thing me and David always talk about, and we always go back to this, is, and we're always on the same page, is it's the core values. And that's a huge learning curve that we've learned. Like, if someone starts in Lucan and, you know, we're like, how are they getting on? And we're always like, what's our core values about? Do you know what I mean? So I look at that as a learning curve with Lucan, and still learning, because if I get a letter I don't like, if I get a phone call, I'm forced on the phone to David and I'm like, talk me through it. What do we do? And you can't pay for that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you really can't pay for that advice.
No, it's invaluable what people have in life's experiences. And that's why me setting this up was to try and get the greatest minds that we have in the industry.
Yeah.
Just answer 7 simple questions and everybody will come up with their own answer. And there's something there to help generations to come, because I think it's our obligation to make sure that this industry stays alive. And the only way it's going to stay alive is from people sharing the story and helping each other keep it alive, you know?
So absolutely.
That's, because this one I'm really going to really enjoy. And I'm actually going to start with you, Olive. I'm going to let you do it first, okay? What an amazing salon in your mind?
Sorry, say that to me again, Greg. I just missed a little bit.
Okay, what makes an amazing salon in your mind?
What makes an amazing salon in my mind is the people you work with. I think it's all about the team. And that's one thing that I, you know, I'm in House of Colour years, and that's why I'm still there, because it's about the team. Because if you can walk into a salon or into a job and absolutely love the place, well, then, I mean, that makes an amazing salon or team for me. Like, I visit all the shops, and I know majority of the people that work there personally through, you know, through courses and education and touch and base them. I love the place. Like David will tell you, I will eat, sleep and drink. I just love it. I use the passion for it. And it's about the people. Like, if David turned around tomorrow and said, Olive, House of Colour's gone, we're jumping ship across the road, I'd be like, grand, what time are we starting at? Like, I'm all in. And it's because of the people. And I know, you know, David and Susan will be quite coy and, you know, they don't say this much, but it's because of them. They've set a culture and they've set a trend. And people like me, you know, buy into that because we have good core values and we want to be around like-minded people who are good-mannered, who want to thrive and do well and who just love what they do. So unlucky for him, I'm absolutely going nowhere because I love the place.
It's a big old quote, isn't it, from Mr. Simon Sinek? People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What they say, the news is out of you. You know what I mean? Like, you could have been there on day one. If you said you were there on day one, you wouldn't doubt it because it's so ingrained into the whole culture of House of Colour.
Yeah.
So, David, the reason I asked Olive first, because I knew you'd cover probably a lot of stuff, and Olive would go, I've leave me bloody nothing now. So...
I can't really, I've not much to say there, really. Besides the fact she said she's staying forever. That's making me a bit worried.
I forgot to tell you that.
I'm going to ask you this, is what makes an amazing salon, from the point of view of what you knew as a salon owner and creating a House of Colour, but also from the point of view of, you know, serving a long stint, an extended stint as president of the IHF. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I suppose it's twofold. I mean, some of the things, you know, some of the values you hold, I think you bring to any position. I started as IHF president in November 2017, and I left in September 2020. So it was a longer stint than most, okay, which dealt with so many different things, everything from the COVID lockdown to the apprenticeship to the national minimum wage increase, to, you know, the industry splitting, basically, you know. And I think it was a huge learning curve from the point of view of the industry to learn that that many people feel so passionately about the industry and wanting to do well in the industry that they're willing to go and set up their own things and do their own things and fight for what they believe in. And you can't argue with people who want to fight what they believe in, you know, because they're right, they believe in it. You may have a different point of view, but ultimately, once you have people out there striving for success, once you have people out there trying to do good things for the industry, I think they're people with the right core values. Like yourself, Greg, doing the stuff you've done in the industry. I mean, you were a president. You are an icon. You have set up so many things.
COVID. I got the recession during mine.
Yeah, so, you know, and I think it's interesting that I am a firm believer that when things get really tough, the right people show up. The right people always show up. And I think that they're the leaders in the industry. And, you know, I look at what Danielle and Lisa are doing now. I think it's amazing. They're just amazing girls. They're doing fantastic work. And they're going to bring the IHF to the next level. And alongside the committee that's there now as well, they're going to bring the IHF to the next level. I think Irish hairdressing is, in my opinion, the best hairdressing in the world. You know, and this is not slight on the UK. I think it's amazing. But I think per capita, when you look at the amount of people who are here, you're talking about an industry that employs 35,000 people to everywhere else in the world. And we are always in the end game. We're always there at the finish line. We're always producing. We're always original. And we're always able to hold our own with anybody, anywhere in the world. And I think that's the one thing I'm most proud of. I think Irish hairdressing has been riding the crest of a wave for 10 years now. 10 years, easily.
And give me the three little things that you feel are key to having that amazing salon.
Oh, no, they're passion, enthusiasm and your core values.
They're the three.
I think skill, like any skill, is there to be learned. I think you do have exceptional people who are creative and just on a different level. But I think if I think of all the people I've been involved with through the years and all the people I've met throughout the world and all the people that I've been to seminars on, and I could probably count maybe seven people that were naturally talented, that just had it. You know, and out of those seven, maybe two or three were actually Irish, that just had it. And the rest are people that have varying degrees of learning abilities. You know, but passion, you know, enthusiasm.
I came across recently, and it's deep practice. It's the repetitiveness of continuously doing it, and the want of having it. Because in the book, he was saying that there's no such thing as natural talent, because you're insulting the person that has that talent, because they didn't learn it. They just practiced it more. They studied it more, and they got it quicker. And that's what you said, different degrees of learning. You know what I mean? It's just that their brain picked it up quicker and they practiced it more and it just grasped it, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember Olive as an apprentice, and, you know, Olive's nickname was 17. Because she never won a competition and she came 17th in everything. You know, and you're talking about 2.5. Well, Olive actually graduated in 16 months, which is a record in the House of Colour. But 2.5 years of coming 17th. And if she wasn't the person that I think she is, which is a fantastically determined, passionate, engaging, communicative woman, if she wasn't that type of person, she would have folded. And she didn't. And that's why she went on to become one of the biggest icons in Irish hairdressing and UK hairdressing, because she just wouldn't give up. And I think learning your trade and learning your skill is more about bounce back ability and really working hard than it is about being creative. I think for most people, creativity comes through experience. In other words, I've tried it. Oh, that's the way to do it. And you've got a small, as you said, Greg, a small percentage of people who are actually born to hairdress. You know, if I use a football analogy, there's only one Lionel Messi. There is literally only one Lionel Messi. There is only one Maradona. There is only one Pele. Some may say there's only one Ronaldo. There's thousands of footballers through the years that have done well. You know, so...
So why we're leaving into, because we can see where you're leaning on who you like as a footballer and mentor, that leads lovely into the next question, is that I've had so many good mentors. I've been blessed with being surrounded by good people, whether it's luck or whether it's just I'm cheeky beggar and I just go along and go up to them and ask them, can you help me? You know what I mean? So in your career, Dave, who has been a mentor to you, or mentors? Don, it doesn't have to be hairdressing. It can be people.
I think there's just been too many to mention. I mean, I go back to being a kid, I grew up in not a very safe neighborhood, you know, and I can remember lads who were either selling drugs or doing drugs telling me, you stay playing football, I don't want to see you in here. And that was when I was about 11 or 12. So you could gauge them as mentors. I do think, you know, if I'm looking at mentorship, I look at it in different areas. With regard to me being mentored and looking for inspiration, it's my team. There's no doubt about that. And that's number one for me. I think every one of them I learn off, I get energy off, and I'm with them shoulder to shoulder, no matter what they're going through, the same as I know they're with me. I think from an industry perspective, the Federation are amazing, and the people running the Federation and people who step out of the box like yourself, Greg, are huge mentors to me, because you make me want to do better. And Danielle and Lisa and the Federation make me want to do better. And Dom makes me want to do better. And they are, once you're pushing the boundaries, you're the mentor, because you can't help but buy in. I think on a personal level, I mean, look, I read everything from Simon Shrenick to Tony Robbins to Tim Ferriss to Guy Raz is one of my favorites now at the moment. So I think that outside of our industry, you can learn loads as well, but I don't think you can categorize one person. If there was one person that had an effect, it probably would have been Paul, because he took an interest at a certain point where I could have went one way or the other. And I think that that was important. But from a career perspective, I think everybody has so many mentors around them. You just have to reach out. You've got to reach out.
Olive, has he left you anybody?
Absolutely. Come here and I tell you, he has. Now, I've been mentored from a very young age by David, because he's had no choice, because I've always been there, joined at the hip. Unfortunately for him, if he's there, I'm there, whether he likes it or not. I'm always scourging him, always asking him, always tell me more, tell me. And like, in fairness to, you know, David, he has stood with me shoulder to shoulder when I couldn't perform, when I had my worst competitions, when I thought the judges were robbing me of trophies, because obviously, you know, they were the problem, not me, Greg. Do you know what I mean? And he was the one that said to me, no, it was crap. It was brutal. Like, if I told you some of the stuff he said to me over models I've done before in the past, we could write a book of quotes. But, and I obviously thought, oh, that looks brilliant. And he's like, well, it looks like a board just came along and crapped copper all over it, Oliver. Are you for real? So, you know, I love a mentor. That David is definitely my number one mentor. And I know, you know, he'd probably be like, oh, no, you're, but he is. He's my go-to for anything in this industry. And even personally as well, I go to him about things from an outsider's point of view when I need it. In the, when I need someone to tell me straight and be honest with me, you know, whether I like it or not. Then a second mentor, which I'm very lucky to have, is Errol Douglas. He's very good to me over the years. I reached out to him when he came over and judged an Irish hairdressing competition, because he had been one of the judges for the Fame team, and that was something that I was really interested in. The first year I went for the Fame team, I didn't get it, and I was devastated over it. So he came over to Ireland, he judged the competition, the Irish hairdressing competition, and I asked him, could I pick his brain about how could I win? There was something I was doing that wasn't wrong. He gave me his number and said, if you're serious, give me a call and I'll talk you through it. And he had only landed in the UK, and I rang him and I said, hey, Errol, it's Olive Tucker here. I want to get on the Fame team. Tell me what I need to do. And from that day on, he has been such an inspiration and a mentor to me. Like, you know, he's been really good to me, sound advice, helped me out in situations where I needed it, or if I'm in the UK, I still meet up with him. And he's actually turned into a really great friend, which is brilliant.
I think the thing it really is that, yeah, don't be afraid to reach out, because people are just people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, Greg, I've no problem in that department.
Is somebody feeling that we've something worth listening to? That then, you know, what I mean? No matter who we are, you know what I mean? The top person, to somebody to come along to you and say, I love what you do, could you tell me a little better? There's very few of them will go, sod off.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And we're all the same, you know? So I knew you were going to say, Errol, because you've always said that as long as I've known you, that Errol, and I've actually said to him, you know, Olive, and he kind of goes, or he's actually said to me, do you know, Olive, and I kind of go, yeah, we already spoke about her before, you know? So last year has been a tough year, but if you're a long time like us, Dave, you know, you're used to it. You know what I mean? These challenges come
up. Well, they're battle scar, Greg, yeah.
we'll look back and we'll look back in this and say it was a challenge and we came through it. You know what I mean? Because we're stronger than we actually think we are. So I've always, what got me through the times was that every day I try to look back and say, what's the glass half full moments that happened today? Because watching, and I'm pointing out there because, you know, it could be a TV or whatever, or media, is dishing out the negative stuff. But I want to get the positive stuff that means something to me, because I can't resolve the issue of COVID. So there's pointless me listening to 24 hours of it when I can't do it. But what I can do is make changes in my own life, my family life, and the people around me. So what are some of the glass half full moments you would have experienced in the last year? And we'd start with you, Olive.
Well, it made me, you know, completely rejig and restructure my life, because I felt like before COVID, I was doing the job of five people and I was getting nowhere fast. I was like a little mouse on a hamster wheel going around, and some things that I was letting slip were the most important things. So I have two young kids, and I feel that this COVID time has allowed me and given me the time that I need with them. And it was only a moment the other day when I was sitting there with my 7-year-old Lola, and I was homeschooling her. And I, you know, had listened to all the mammies say, oh, my God, it's hell. It's brutal. It's this, that, and the other. And I really enjoy it, because I can see how much she's coming on. And I want her to remember this time and think, do you know what? that was, COVID wasn't bad. We make sure that we get out for a walk. I make sure that I don't shout at her because I'm like, oh, I don't want her to remember me as, you know, like stressed out mammy. I baked with her. I've done stuff that I would never have done. And I think that's important for me. It has made me look at my family and made me think, you know what, this is, COVID is COVID, but these are so important to me. Like my son, who's 3, he's come on so much. And like my husband's a frontline worker. And when he comes home and we're in our bubble, it's the best. I can't explain it. You know, like I love us being home. Sometimes when lockdown comes around, I'm not one of those people that's on the floor going, oh, I'm raging. I'm looking at it as a time to, okay, readjust, reboot, and use this time as a positive time in my family industry.
I think, look, I have to give big up, and I keep saying about the government here, because we do moan, and we've had 2 governments. But generally, I think the people in power have helped us handle this situation a lot better by putting the support in place. And unfortunately, this is a global community, and not everywhere in the world has been given that. So I think we count our blessings and be glad from where we're born and where we're positioned from. Because we're looking that there's so many.
100%.
Dave, glass half full for yourself.
Yeah, I think it'd be similar to Olive. I think, you know, my 3 kids at home myself. I think getting to spend time with them, getting to spend time with Catherine, my wife, who's involved in the business as well. So it's really interesting to be around Catherine, you know, on a lockdown basis where we're not talking business and we're just, you know, sort of being a normal couple as such is sort of very weird. But I also think, you know, it gives you the opportunity to reassess and reevaluate everything, as Dolph put so brilliantly. And I also think you actually get time to check yourself. You know, have you done what you have to do? Have you lived up to your goals? Have you lived up to your personal goals? Have you lived up to your career goals? What do you need to do on the next step? And, you know, the fact that it's gone on for a sustained period of time means that realistically, we can never say, I don't have the time for something now.
No.
We can never say that again. That's gone.
No.
You know, and I think that, you know, we went into lockdown one type of people and we will come out of lockdown a different set of people. And I think we'll be better. I do think we'll be better for it. And I think, you know, my glass half full moment was the reality of the second lockdown, I think. Because I think the first lockdown was, everyone was like, woohoo! You know, this is amazing!
Got a summer off for her.
Yeah, wow! You know, but I think...
Yeah, throw it.
But I think the second and third lockdown is where I've noticed the focusing by everybody. Focusing on, okay, what's next for me? You know, I'm not talking about next for me is a holiday to a beach. I mean, what's going to happen the next 10 years? What's going to happen the next 5 years? There's been a focus, and, you know, and I think if people aren't taking that time to do that, you know, that's a sin, really. You know, time is the one thing you don't get back. So you've got to make the most of it.
The most valuable thing we have, and the one thing we are, none of us know how long we have. You know what I mean? So it's true, I always say, I want to know what I'm doing. I want to know what I'm doing in 5 years' time, not next week.
Yeah, 100%.
5 years, but I don't know. But let's all think ahead. As you, the one thing I loved about what you said, Dave, is not looking back. Look back at the experience, but not dwelling on stuff. You know what I mean? Because the only thing we can change is, we can live in the now, change the future. As I pointed out to a lot of Liverpool fans recently, when they were digging me at Manchester United, top of the league, and going, I'm living in the moment, so leave me alone. In the moment, we're top of the league. So let's not
get started on that one, maybe. Yeah. Another 45 minutes.
We're on to the last question. And it's one that you can answer, but there's varying degrees of how you'll answer it, because none of us really know. Like, one, we don't have a return to work date, but we know it's coming. So what would you like the future to hold for your business over the next 12 months? And I'm going to let you decide yourselves who wants to go first.
I'll go first. I'm not sure lockdown allowed us to assess our business at every angle. Introduce new teams, cut back on other teams, look at where we're going to go over the next 5 years. The first thing we're launching is a House of Colour scholarship called Project 37. Olive, Marcus, Emma, Lauren, Zara McIntyre, Zara Doherty, everyone was involved in this, Susan. And really what we're going to do is we are going to select 10 scholarships in the group. And those apprentices will graduate in 37 weeks. So from start to finish, they'll graduate in 37 weeks. They're going to be paid to attend our academy 3 days a week. So we can't wait to launch that. It's a force for the industry. It's never been done before. And it's going to solve your problem with regard to recruiting and people not coming into the industry. We're going to have a batch of these each year, and it's going to be called Project 47. The second thing is our online education offering. We're going to kick that off in the next 3 to 4 weeks. We're starting with our business offering. We're going to start with Get the Edge, which is our bespoke seminar for salon owners, stylists, and 40-year apprentices. And basically, it's a seminar to teach them how to make money, how to make a career in hairdressing, how to do well for themselves. We have had over 250 people from outside House of Colour attend this course over the past 2.5 years. We're now going to bring it forward and give you an online offering with it. We have expansion planned. We're hoping to open 2 more salons in the next 18 months, and this will obviously be fueled by the Project 47 apprentices. We're opening our wig boutique. We're taking in extensions into the salon. We are launching our gathering event for the group, which is we're shutting the salon for 2 days for inspirational speakers to come in, which is something similar you've done yourself, Greg, a couple of years ago, which went fantastically well. We're looking at expanding into different areas. I'm going to be launching another website called salonowner.ie, which is exclusively for new and current salon owners to try and help them get through areas and times that's difficult in the industry. You know, I mean, you as president would know, Greg, the amount of people you're dealing with in the Federation, and me, myself, and to think that they've nowhere to go or, you know, no one to talk to. And we're going to try and alleviate that fear by setting up a salon owners, well, it's set up already. We're going to launch a salon owners website called salonowners.ie. You've also then got the art team. We're going to be doing a national tour. We're going to be appearing at Salon International. We just have so many different areas that we're going to branch into. It's going to be very exciting. It really is going to be very exciting. So, yeah, can't wait.
It's not that it's exciting. It's always exciting, David. Always exciting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I can't say a wow, because it's always a wow. You know what I mean? You're not somebody that sits still, you know? So I'd say you even sleep sitting up.
Yeah. That's probably why I'm still married to Catherine, because I don't snore because I'm sitting up.
Yeah, right. We're going to give you the same question, Olive. Has he left you anything?
Well, yeah, I'm lucky enough to be a part of a lot of the stuff that David has mentioned there. I mean, the project 47 is very exciting. That's something that we've been working behind the scenes on. And to be honest with you, from an apprentice point of view, and I'm very passionate about education, I want stability back for them. I want them to feel like they have a place in the salon. You know, at the moment when we went back on the other COVIDs, I felt like they felt lost. I felt like, you know, as a stylist, we were doing everything because there could only be a certain amount of people with consumers. And I just felt that they were no man's land. So I want to get back on board, get them in, you know, get their education, get their structure, and make sure that they know they have a place and they know they have a journey and they know where they're going. So for me, being part of Project 47 is just phenomenal, and I'm very excited about getting my teeth into them, because not only are they learning new techniques, they're learning a different way of coming into hairdressing, because hairdressing has changed as well, you know. And then I also think I'm really excited about getting everyone back together. I want the team aspect back. I want us all to be able to go on a night out. I want us all to just, you know, get paralytic together. And, you know, I'm looking forward to competitions and trend visions and just basically to get our new normal up and running, get adjusted and get cracking.
Brilliant. Now, listen, guys, I knew David Campbell, Olive Tucker-Lee, is it been a breath of fresh air? I knew yous would be, and I'm privileged to have had yous here this evening. So if there's a quick goodbye you want to say, we've had a little bit of glitch with the internet, so we'll apologise for that. And Olive, I think, is frozen at the moment. David's free, so it's gone from one to the other, but I'm sure, Dave, you want to say a quick goodbye?
Yeah, just listen, can I just say to you, Greg, it's a huge honour
to be asked to do this. I think what you're doing and how you're going about your business at the moment, not only from the distribution, but the ideas you bring to the industry and the originality you bring to the industry, it's an absolute honour for you to ask us to be on this. And I can't thank you enough for everything you've done for Irish Hairdressers.
Did you just miss me?
Yeah, we didn't. So we're just saying goodbye, and David's just, he's talking nicely about me. I don't know why. I must have paid him somewhere along the way. So I just said, if you want to say a little goodbye, Olive, as well.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks a million for giving me the opportunity to be part of this. I absolutely really enjoyed it. It gave me a great reason to get up, get washed, dressed, and do my hair this morning. And I really enjoyed it, and thanks again. I really feel privileged that you asked me and invited me to come on to this. So thanks a million, Greg.
And thank you, guys. So until another hump of the week, I'll say goodbye to you now. Stay safe out there.
Thank you for watching or listening to our interview with David Campbell and Olive Tucker Lee of House of Colour. If you've enjoyed the interviews, please like, share and subscribe to our channels and our pages. We look forward to hearing from you, and we look forward to you giving us a 5-star review. So keep the faith and see you all again soon. Take care.